Thank you very much. Thanks to the organizers for inviting me. It's great to be here. Fantastic view. And thank you all for staying till the end. Well, the fact that we are having this conference or this meeting, it's a definite proof that set theory has philosophical interest or philosophical significance. And in fact, many set theorists, many professional set theorists like myself, were drawn in the first place to set theory because of this, because at least I'm speaking for myself, set theory is not just a mathematical discipline or not just one more mathematical discipline in which you try to prove great theorems or less great theorems or solve interesting or less interesting problems, but set theory has this appeal that no other mathematical subject has, namely that it touches on very, very deep questions about not only of mathematics, but about the world. So, well, I don't have to convince you of that, obviously. You all know this, but I just want to say it. Anyway, the title of my talk is a bit pretentious because I definitely will not do much philosophy. In fact, the title should have been a presentation of some set theoretic results or recent breakthroughs in set theory for your philosophical consideration. So it will be your job to draw philosophical conclusions from what I will be saying. What I will try to do is to present these results, which I think are fascinating, in a way that I will do my best to avoid technicalities and try to convey what they mean or what is their significance. Okay, so let's begin. So I will be talking about three results. The first one has already been mentioned in Douglas' talk. This is a result by Toshimichi Usuba, which says that if kappa is an extendable cardinal, then the kappa mantle is a ground. Don't worry, I will explain what this means. The second result is a very, very recent result by David Aspero and Ralph Schindler that shows that something called MM++, this is a very strong forcing axiom, implies something called star, Woodin's star axiom, which is also a kind of forcing axiom. Okay, I should say that the paper they released is extremely hard, very, very extremely technical. No one except for them has gone through all the details already. But some prominent set theorists claim that it is probably okay. So I will take it as a theorem. Okay, so but take this with a grain of salt, because next week or maybe next day someone will find some problem in the proof. Hopefully not, because it's a great theorem. And the last thing I will be talking about is so-called Woodin's hot dichotomy theorem. It is another striking result. I will devote a good part of my talk about this, and then at the end I will give you some hint on what this means for the future of set theory. Okay, so let's begin with Usuba's theorem. Let me remind you of some notions from so-called set theoretic geology. An inner model, when we say inner model, we always mean a transitive model of ZFC that contains all ordinals, okay? We say it's a ground if the universe is a set extension of it. So there is some partial ordering in this ground, and there is a generic in the universe such that the extension of the ground by the generic is the whole universe. Okay, that's what we call a ground. For example, if you start with L and add the coin real, then in the extension L of a coin real, L is a ground. Okay. And we say that W is a kappa ground is the same thing, but the forcing extension must have size less than kappa. When kappa is inaccessible, this is the same saying that it has to be in V kappa, or it has to have rank, sorry, W kappa. Okay, so it has rank less than kappa. Okay, these are very simple notions. Now, the definition of the mantle is this. The mantle is just the intersection of all the grounds. Okay, all the grounds of the of V, just intersect them all, and that's called the mantle. Okay, and the kappa mantle is just the intersection of all kappa grounds. All right, so Usuba's theorem, which is very recent, says that, has published a few months ago, it says that if kappa is an extendable cardinal, if there exists such a cardinal, then the kappa mantle is the smallest ground. Which, what is surprising here is that it, I'm sorry, back. What is surprising here is that it is a ground at all. There's no reason a priori why the intersection of all the grounds has to be a ground. He proved that before this result about a year ago using a very, very strong, much stronger than extendable large cardinal. But in this theory, this is a much better, much finer result because he shows that it's not only a ground, because it's the mantle, it's the smallest round, it's the kappa mantle, and it's the mantle. So if you look at the, so the picture is that all the grounds, when you intersect them all, what you get is some core. Douglas also used that word, that there is a core, right? That V has, and it's the intersection of all grounds of V. All right. So now, how about the assumption that there is an extendable cardinal? So an extendable cardinal, as you can see there, it just says that if kappa is extendable, means that for every lambda greater than kappa, you can have an embedding from V lambda, so that's V lambda, into some V mu that sends, kappa is the critical point, is sent above lambda, okay? And that's it. So in this you can do it for every lambda, there is such a mu, okay?
Do we know the mantle is always a mu model even if kappa is not
extendable? I'm sorry?
If kappa were not extendable, would you still know the mantle as a mu model?
No,
yep.
No. Okay, so this is absolutely obvious that exists, right? Well, if you are not convinced, I can give you another definition of extendable. So suppose, consider the following principle. Take any sigma 3 definable class of structures. And we say that there is kappa, such that if you take any structure in the class, say A, no matter what it is, then you can always find another structure in the class, but down below here, which looks very much like it, meaning that there is an embedding. So it's a very simple reflection principle for classes of structures, okay? So if we say this for classes that are sigma 3 definable, that's an extendable. If we say this for sigma 2 classes, that's a supercompact. If we say this is true for all definable classes, that's Wopenka principle. So it's just a very simple, intuitively clear, very natural reflection principle for the universe. And that's extendability. Okay. But that's usually the official definition, which is not as nice. But all right. So what consequences can we draw from this? Well, first one is it's about the generic multiverse again. I mean, there have been many talks about this. You all know what it is. This is Woodin's definition. There are slightly different definitions, but I'm going to take the original one by Woodin. And so one corollary of Usuba's theorem is that the kappa mantle is just the least element of a generic multiverse. So the generic multiverse is generated by this kappa mantle. Not just the mantle, but it's the least element of this generic multiverse. and everything else is a forcing extension of it, right? By forcings of size less than kappa, that's a nice thing. Right. A second consequence of Usuba's theorem is about multiverse truth. So a multiverse truth is true that it's a sentence that is true in all the models of the multiverse. So what this is telling us is that in the presence of an extendable cardinal, something is a sentence phi is a multiverse truth, even only if the kappa mantle satisfies that every poset forces it. So if you want to know whether some sentence is true in the whole multiverse, you just go to the kappa mantle. And you see, for every sentence, there is another sentence. Take phi, take phi, okay? What is the other sentence? The other sentence says, for every p, p forces phi. That's another sentence. And there's a recursive translation from one sentence to the other. So if you want to know if something is a multiverse truth, you just don't look at this sentence. Look at the other sentence and check if it holds in the kappa mantle. So it, which is fantastic, right? It's a way of reducing multiverse truth to this. I don't know what this means philosophically, but I think it's quite nice. A third consequence, and this is the last one, it's about Hod. So there's something called the generic Hod, which is defined as the intersection of all the Hods of all set generic extensions, okay? Well, here's another consequence of Usuba's theorem. If there exists an extendable cardinal, then the generic Hod is nothing else but the Hod of the mantle, or the kappa mantle, which is the same. Okay? So if you want to study definability across the multiverse, you study the Hod of the mantle. Okay? So this reduces, this theorem, what in fact does, it reduces many questions about the multiverse to questions about this core.
M of Hod is different from Hod of M?
Sorry?
Is it the Hod of M?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yes. It should be. It's a typo. I mean, the Hod of the mantle, not the mantle of the Hod. The Hod of the mantle. Okay. Thank you. Right. Okay. So I leave it at here. So let's move on to the next theorem. So this is the Asperger-Schindler theorem, and this is about forcing axioms. Okay, let me remind you quickly of some basic definitions. For a class of forcing, when I say forcing notions, I mean partial orderings, set partial orderings. The forcing axiom for this class just says that for every partial ordering in the class, if you take any family of Prédent subsets of P, think of the, instead of Prédent, think of maximal anti-chains. Set is Prédent if every condition is compatible with some guy in the set. So then there is an agenetic filter. There's a filter that intersects all of them. This is a kind of technical definition, but the origin is in a generalization of the Bayer category theorem to the uncountable, to a minor one. Probably you all know that, so I keep. You can also formulate what is called the bounded forcing axiom, which is exactly the same, but here you require that the anti-chains or the Prédent sets, doesn't matter, they have size at most aleph 1, okay? That's the bounded form. So, for example, Martin's axiom is just the forcing axiom for CCC partial orderings, and this is bounded because it's CCC, so the anti-chains have size countable, therefore less than omega 1. So that's the bounded, Martin's axiom is already a bounded axiom. But there are other axioms that are not bounded, for example, the proper forcing axiom, which is forcing axiom for proper forcing notions. Properness is weaker than being CCC, this is a much, much stronger axiom, or it has its bounded form as well. And then there is the Martin's maximum, which is the same, but here we look at partial orderings that preserve stationary subsets of omega 1. Okay, this is a larger class of partial orderings. And this Martin's maximum was called Martin's maximum because it's kind of maximum. There are stronger versions. I will show you one next. But this is essentially the strongest form, okay? Okay, but look, the bounded forcing axioms can be rephrased in a very natural way. A long time ago, I showed that Martin's axiom, it just says, it's equivalent to saying that if you can force by CCC forcing that there exists something, some set, okay, whose properties only depend on sets in H omega 2, then such a set already exists in the Brown model. So it's an absoluteness principle. If something is possible, then it's already true. Okay, that's what it says. And the same is true for, same characterization can be given for all bounded forcing axioms. So bounded forcing axioms are very natural set theoretic absoluteness principles, right? Okay, how about the unbounded ones? Well, the unbounded ones as well, in a different sense, they are not so natural. For example, Sakai Fucino was the first who realized that forcing axioms were indeed generic absoluteness principles. He showed this very nice characterization of Martin's maximum. The same holds for PFA. It just says that if you have two structures, A and B, A has size aleph 1, and you, by forcing which preserves stationary subsets of omega 1, or by proper forcing or whatever, by a forcing in your class, you can produce an embedding of the small structure into the big one, then such an embedding is already in the universe. So if you can produce it generically, it already exists. This is what it says, okay? Okay. Now let's look at those very, very strong axioms, MM++. MM++ says more than MM. It says that if you take any stationary preserving partial ordering and any collection of pre-dense subsets and any collection of omega 1 many names or terms for stationary subsets of omega 1, okay, so we not only have those omega 1 dense sets, we also have omega 1 many names for stationary subsets of omega 1. Then we can find the generic filter for this collection that intersects all the pre-dense sets, but also this generic interprets all these names as stationary sets. Okay, so this is much more, it is much stronger. I mean, it's known that this is much stronger than MM. Okay. But let's look at the bounded form. So again, it's the same thing, but we only require that the A alpha have size at most omega 1. So what is the bounded form? Well, the bounded form is, again, is this natural absoluteness principle. It just says that if you can force by a forcing that preserves stationary sets, subsets of omega 1, you can force some set, you can produce some set whose properties depend only on sets in H omega 2, and here you have an additional predicate, the predicate of being non-stationary or being stationary, doesn't matter. Okay, so you have this notion added to the theory. Then such a set already exists in the universe. Okay, so it's very natural. All right. Okay, here's the other axiom. By the way, I should say that this Martin's maximum or Martin's maximum plus plus, those axioms were introduced mainly for, I wouldn't say technical reasons, but they were introduced as generalizations of Martin's axiom and see how can one push this, okay? How strong an axiom of this sort can be. And there's a lot of literature drawing consequences of these axioms, the famous papers by Foreman, Magidor, and Chela in Annals of Mathematics, where they show that Martin's maximum has a lot of, interesting consequences for infinite combinatorics and so on, also for the theory of the reals. But so the motivation was to a certain extent technical, right? Right, how about Woodin's star axiom? So Woodin's star axiom is this very simple statement. Yes, absolutely, obviously true, as everyone can see. So it says that AV holds in L of R, and there is a filter for something called Pmax, generic over L of R, such that the generic extension contains all subsets of omega 1. Okay, why would anyone come up with such a thing? Well, maybe the following can illuminate what's going on behind doors. So suppose there is a proper class of Woodin cardinals, okay? And take any set of reals in L of R. So any set of reals that is reasonably definable. So it can be definable using ordinals and reals as parameters. Okay? And suppose that in some forcing extension, any set forcing extension, you can show that some pi 2 statement holds in this structure. What is A? Well, A, because we have that many Woodin cardinals, a proper class, sets of reals in L of R are absolute. Namely, L of R is absolute. So you take the definition of A, which is a definition with ordinals and reals as parameters, and then you run the definition in the extension. Okay. So A star is just A, but think of A not as a set, but as a definition with reals and ordinals as parameters. So, and suppose this happens, okay? So take your set in L of R, set of reals in L of R, take your pi 2 sentence phi, and suppose you can force that this is true, this sentence is true in this model. Well, then the sentence was already true in this structure, not in V, but in the L of R of the Pmax forcing extension. Okay. So in other words, if something can of complexity pi 2 can be forced to hold in H omega 2, then it can already be forced to hold in some Pmax extension of L of R. All right. By the way, this Pmax extension of L of R satisfies choice. L of R doesn't, but this extension does satisfy choice and contains all subsets of omega 1. So this is a very rich model. I mean, this is wrong, sorry. It's the, let me say, because this is a bit confusing. So it holds in the it holds in any Pmax extension of the L of R of the Brown model. Okay, that's what it says. Sorry, this is bad notation. Okay, so you see this is what's going on behind, right? So this is why this forcing Pmax, which I will not define because it would take a few hours and maybe a few weeks. Yeah, it's a horrible in the technical sense. But so this is why Pmax comes in here, because Pmax is a kind of universal forcing, right? For pi 2 sentences that hold in H omega 2. Okay, so let me go back. So this is a justification of this, right? Why do we care about this forcing and why is this a reasonable? Is this a reasonable axiom? Well, it is a reasonable axiom because what Woodin was trying to do, and he succeeded, is in finding an axiom that would give an essentially complete theory of H omega 2, right? So ZFC plus the axiom star decides in omega logic every sentence about H omega 2 together with a non-stationary ideal, and so on, okay? So this axiom does it. It's the axiom for H omega 2 plus non-stationary ideal and so on in the presence of large cardinals. So it gives you the most complete theory you can hope for, namely in completeness in the sense of omega logic. That's the best you can do. All right. So for a number of years, the question was, okay, we have this Martin's maximum plus plus on one hand. Then we have this Woodin's axiom star. They both try to do similar things. They both try to maximize or decide the theory of H omega 2. But what's the relation between them? I mean, do they imply one? Does one imply the other? The program of trying to justify forcing axioms was put in a difficult situation, because which one is better? Should we go for MM plus plus? Should we go for star? Is there a clear connection between them? Well, it was known that quite quickly that star does not imply MM plus plus. Okay. But this is why, and many people asked, and many people tried to show that MM plus plus implies star, and finally it seems that Aspera and Schindler succeeded. Okay, why is this interesting? Well, for many reasons, but I'll show you one reason, because when you look at the proof, you get more information. It shows actually that, assuming there is a proper class of Woodin cardinals, then what is star? Star is just this. Is a sigma 1 absoluteness principle for the structure H omega 2 with the non-stationary ideal plus sets of reals in L of R. It's exactly the same as what we had for the other bounded forcing axioms, but that's exactly equivalent to star. So it just star is just more sophisticated or stronger form of Martin's axiom and the bounded forcing axioms for proper or Martin's maximum, right? So, and that's what star is. So this gives us a lot of information about this axiom. It also shows that it is a very natural axiom. Okay? It's a very natural reflection principle. Something exists, then it, in some forcing extension that preserves stationary sets, that it already exists in B. Okay. Right. So when did I start? I didn't check. So. Okay. Great. Great. Wonderful. Right. So here's the third example. The third theorem I want to tell you about. This so-called Woodin's hot dichotomy theorem. So let's see. Ronald Jensen proved in his famous paper on the fine structure of the constructible universe that either the universe V is very close to L or is very far from it. What does that mean? It means that either every singular cardinal is singular in L, infinite singular cardinal is singular in L, and L computes the successor correctly, or every uncountable cardinal is inaccessible in L. So that's the close to L option or alternative. That's the far from L alternative. Okay. And they are very different. So whether you take this one or this one of the two is true. So whether you take one or the other, you have a completely different conception of V. Okay, but which one is the true one? Well, obviously the second one, yes. That's because there are large cardinals. I mean, if zero sharp exists, you have this. Actually, the existence of zero sharp is equivalent to saying that two is the true one. That's equivalent to the existence of zero sharp. So we all know that zero sharp exists. It follows from the existence of a measurable. So that's clearly the true option. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I didn't formulate it this way because for the second dichotomy it doesn't work that way. Okay. Right. Okay. So here is Woodin's hot dichotomy. there is a similar, very similar dichotomy, not for L but for hot. If there exists an extendable cardinal, then again we have these two alternatives: either V is close to hot or is far from it. Okay, and this means that the same as before, the close alternative, it just says that every singular cardinal above the extendable cardinal. Now we have this extendable cardinal, and now we look above it. Okay, so either every singular cardinal above kappa is singular in hot and hot computes its successor correctly, or every regular cardinal greater or equal than kappa is measurable in hot. So, you know, even successor cardinals are measurable in hot. So it's very different. Yes. Okay. So what the original form is this with a measurable, then he changed it to omega strongly measurable. This is a technical notion. I will not, if you press me, I will tell you what it is, but if you don't, let's get going. This is a notion that's a bit, it's technical and it's a bit stronger than measurability in hot. So if something is strongly measurable in hot, then it's measurable in hot. Okay. All right. But the point here is, again, that we are faced with two alternatives that are very different. So we know that if we believe in extendable cardinals, and we all do, right? I mean, that's so obvious. But if we all believe that, then we are faced with this alternative. And there's no middle point. I mean, you cannot say, what about not that far? But no, either you are very close or you are very far. Those are two conceptions of V that are completely different, and one of them is the right one. We don't know yet which one it is, okay? But V has to be like one or like two. There's no alternative. Okay. So, that's what I just said. So the difference is that now, in the case of the hot dichotomy, large cardinals don't help. They don't force us to accept one or the other. Yeah. Okay. One or the other possibilities are compatible with all large cardinals that are known, that are compatible with ZFC. Okay. So the large cardinals don't help. They don't help us to decide which one is the true one. And in fact, there is the evidence from inner model theory. What I mean is that there is evidence following Hugh Woodin's work on his ultimate L program that very likely the first alternative is the true one. Okay, because it turns out that if the program for building ultimate L succeeds, this ultimate L has to be something Woodin calls a weak extender model for a supercompact, and it is a nice inner model, so it has to be contained in hot, okay. And Woodin showed that if there is such a model, whatever it is, doesn't have to be the intended ultimate L, any weak extender model for a supercompact that is contained in hot will imply that the first alternative of the dichotomy is the true one. So there is kind of evidence. So it's not just that he wouldn't succeed in building his ultimate L, but any reasonable inner model theory that produces an inner model for a supercompact will imply that if it succeeds, it will imply that the first alternative is the true one. Okay, so there is a lot of evidence for that, but we don't know yet. Okay, it may all fall apart. So because there is so much evidence, Woodin formulated the so-called hot conjecture, which says that ZFC plus there exists an extendable cardinal, this theory proves that the first alternative of the Hodge dichotomy is the true one, namely that there is a proper class of regular cardinals that are not omega strongly measurably hot. Well, don't think about this way. Think ZFC plus there is an extendable cardinal proves that the first alternative is the true one. Okay, and this is just that's typical of Wooding. He formulates it this way as in terms of probability. So this is an arithmetical statement. So it's not it's not subject to independence by forcing or anything. This is an absolute statement, right? Okay. So no one can claim this is ambiguous or it has no sense. It's just something about natural numbers. All right. Okay, so now question is there any natural large cardinal principle that would give, that would imply that the second alternative is the Hodge dichotomy? Well, as I said, certainly none of the known large cardinals. Let's look at some other cardinals.
Is it probably known?
Okay, so how much time do I have? I can explain it to you later, because it would take me at least 5 or 6 minutes. Yeah, it's already known for, up to huge, super huge, and so on. For rank into rank, you have to put an additional condition into the notion of weak extender model. So, anyway, there are some technical issues. But so let's look at this. We say that a cardinal is a Berkeley cardinal if whenever you take any transitive set, doesn't have to be a model or anything, it can be an ordinal, it can be whatever, any transitive set that contains it, then there is an elementary embedding of the set into itself with arbitrary high critical point. I mean, this is total nonsense, right? I mean, this is, how could there be something like this? So, because this is total nonsense, when Wooding introduced this in, I think it was 1986, he came to the set theory seminar in Berkeley, and he told us, look, I came up with this idea. Okay, let's, you guys, a kind of an exercise. Try to disprove this, okay? Well, that was in 86. No one has disproved it yet. Okay, so these Berkeley cardinals, what we know is that they contradict the axiom of choice, okay? Yes, if you assume the axiom of choice, then it's quite easy. It's quite easy to disprove it. But again, I mean, right? And it's stronger than the existence of a Reinhardt cardinal, an elementary embedding, non-trivial, of the universe into itself. All right, this we know. But what we showed with Pierre Kellner and Hugh Wooding, couple of years ago, we showed in ZF that if the Hodge conjecture holds, then there are no Berkeley cardinals. So if the, in other words, if Berkeley cardinals are consistent with ZF, then the Hodge conjecture fails.
So you need both Berkeley cardinals and extendables, so jointly consistent with them?
Yeah, okay, when I say the Hodge conjecture fails, I mean that the theory ZFC plus there exists an extendable does not prove that the first option, the first alternative of the dichotomy holds, okay? So we show that. Right, so this points to a possible candidate for a large cardinal principle compatible with ZFC that would yield the second alternative. Because those cardinals, Berkeley, are nice, they are interesting. You should read our paper, which will, it's available on the internet, but it will be published soon, we hope. So what we were trying is to show they don't exist, but we didn't succeed, okay? So we started proving theorems about them. Oh, wow, there's a lot of structure here. Maybe they are consistent, which God forbid they are. I mean, they shouldn't be consistent because otherwise it's going to be a complete chaos. But now we are not so sure, right? It possibly. What seemed to be a crazy idea, now it doesn't seem to be so crazy. So maybe it will be like that. But anyway, this points to the possibility of defining a different kind of large cardinal notions, different from the ones that we know, and which are presumably compatible with ZFC. For example, take this notion, okay? So let's say that delta is an inner model. In our case, take n equals hot. Okay, so we say that it's an n Berkeley cardinal, the same as before, but now you require that the transitive sets you are looking at are not all transitive sets, but only the transitive sets that live in N, okay? For all we know, this is consistent with ZFC. So if N is L, then this is just zero sharp, okay? What about when N is hot? Well, then we can do the following. If we start ZF plus there is a Berkeley cardinal is consistent, then we can force ZFC and there exists a hot Berkeley cardinal. So this is why I said that for all we know, this kind of large cardinal is consistent with ZFC. Okay, so if there is such a hot Berkeley cardinal, this gives us a hot analog of zero sharp, which means that the second alternative of the dichotomy is the true one. So there is a possibility for the existence of these large cardinals compatible with ZFC, which imply the second alternative. All right, and he wouldn't show exactly what I... So he showed this. He showed that if you have ZFC and an extendable cardinal and a hot Berkeley cardinal, then you get the second alternative of the hot dichotomy. So hot is far from B. Now the question is whether this is consistent, right? I mean, that's... But... Right. Okay, the last thing... how much? Like 5-6 minutes or something like that? Okay. So the last thing I want to tell you about is some recent work we have done with my PhD student Alejandro Poveda. There's currently only one program for resolving the hot dichotomy, and this is Woodin's program for proving the ultimate L conjecture. Okay, which is a much stronger conjecture than the hot conjecture. And this is it's a program based on inner model theory, and this is the only program there is. I mean, no one else is trying to prove this, as far as I know. There's no other way to show this. Apparently, there is this kind of program for proving the second alternative based on Berkeley cardinals or hot Berkeley cardinals, but what we did with my student was try to understand better this notion of hot far from V. Okay, because what does it mean? Hot is far from V. How far can it be? Well, what we showed is that even assuming there's a suppose that the hot conjecture is true. Okay, so ZFC plus an extendable proves that hot is close to V. Even if this is so, what we showed is that you can still force over V. It has to be class forcing, cannot be set forcing, and make V very, very different from hot and preserve the extendable. So in these forcing extensions, hot is very close to V in one sense, in the sense of the dichotomy, because we are still in the first alternative, but is very far from V in some other senses that I will tell you. Okay, let me just quickly show you what the results are. So the first consideration is how do you preserve an extendable cardinal by forcing? Well, typically, large cardinals are not destroyed by small forcing, namely forcing of size less than the cardinal. You can destroy some the large cardinal properties of the cardinal without destroying the cardinal. You can make a cardinal inaccessible, not inaccessible, and not collapsing anything just by adding kappa many random kappa many reals. Or you could have a measurable cardinal. You can destroy the measurability of the cardinal, but still preserve it being inaccessible and preserve. Okay, there's all sorts of things you can do, but to destroy large cardinal properties. Okay. If we look at this last example, the forcing, we just add kappa plus plus subsets of kappa. The forcing that does that is what's called less than kappa directed. Less than kappa directed means that if you have a collection of conditions such that any two have something below, then there's one single condition that is below all of them. Okay. All right, so there's a very famous theorem of Richard Leiber that showed that there's a way of there's a forcing notion that's called the Leiber preparation that is less than kappa directed. Kappa is a supercompact, and after doing this preparation, you cannot destroy the supercompact by any less than kappa directed forcing. So you make it indestructible. Okay. Well, for extendibles, this is not possible. You always destroy extendibles. So with Hamkins, Saprunis, and Usuba, we showed that if you take any extendable cardinal and you force with any non-trivial, strategically less than kappa closed is even a weaker condition than that. So then you destroy it. So it's very easy to kill, to destroy extendable cardinals by set forcing. Okay, so there isn't much hope there, but what we showed with my student is that by using class forcing, we can for a large variety of class forcing notions, we can force and preserve the extendible cardinals in V. So if we are in the situation where in V there is an extendable cardinal, right, so then we can do this class forcing. The class forcing has to satisfy certain requirements, obviously, but we do the class forcing, we change hot very, very much and still preserve the extendible, okay? So again, this shows what I said before, but let me say it again. It shows that even if the hot conjecture is true, then we can show that, okay, hot conjecture, we have an extendible, so it means that V is close to hot. So it's very close to hot, but this shows that it's also very different from hot in some other senses. What some other senses? Well, for example, I'll just show you a couple of things very quickly. So suppose you take a delta 2 definable, means both sigma 2 and pi 2 definable function on the class of infinite regular cardinals that is strictly increasing and monotone. So take any such one. For example, you assign to each regular cardinal its successor, or its double successor, or its 25th successor, or something like this, you know, something that it's easily definable. You can do much more complicated things, but think of these simple examples. Then you can force with class forcing, and you preserve the extendible cardinal, and you force this. You force that the successor of lambda computed by hot is not bigger than this, it's below this cardinal. And you see this, we could have taken it very, very large. And this is the real successor. So you see there is a big difference between hot and the universe in the way it computes lambda plus. This gap in between can be made extremely large. So, and this you can do for all regulars. So hot and V don't agree at all about what successors of regulars are, or, you know, it's complete difference. They agree on singulars and successor of singulars, but on regulars it can be a completely different story. Or, for example, you can destroy cardinals that are singular in hot. Okay, for example, take the function kappa that sends every, so For every regular lambda, you look at the least singular in hot greater than lambda. Okay, so that's the plus omega as computed in hot. Then this is delta 2 definable. So we are in the previous case, and we get a model by this class forcing where the first singular above lambda as computed by hot is certainly not the same as in the universe, because it's even below the successor. Yeah, so it's complete disagreement between the singulars of hot and the singulars of B. Not the other way around, because if we have the hot conjecture, so every singular in B is singular in hot, but not the other way around. Okay, so all these results, and I'm done. So all these results, what they show, let me summarize a bit. So this hot dichotomy, what has done has placed a theory at a crossroads, right? Because if we believe there are extendable cardinals, then one of the two alternatives has to be true. The question is which one. Woodin's program, if it's successful, will show that one of its consequences will be that the first alternative is the true one. If large cardinals beyond choice, like Berkeley cardinals, or their compatible hot versions turn out to be consistent, then this would show that the second alternative is the true one. So which of the futures we have? In our paper, we call the first future the future of pattern, the second the future of chaos. So we don't know whether pattern or chaos will prevail, but whichever, it's going to be fun. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.